Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Jackie Cooper. I'm the Global Chief Brand Officer and Senior Advisor at Edelman. Trust is the ultimate currency in the relationship between institutions and their stakeholders. And I'm so delighted to have Ben Bright from Airbnb on with us today for Trustmakers. Airbnb believes in the value of trust so strongly that the company has developed roles focused on building and maintaining trust among those renting out and staying in properties around the world. And Ben, you've got the best title for this conversation. Ben Bright is the Global Director of Trust Communications at Airbnb. And I'm so happy that you're joining me to discuss just how key trust is to the brand of Airbnb. And I'm expecting high things given that title. There's no pressure, but welcome to the Trustmakers.
No pressure at all. No, thank you for having me.
So on a serious note, this is an incredible role to know about. To be that Global Director of Trust Communications, it's not a title that every company has. So can you actually just share with us how the role came to be and what exactly does it entail?
Sure. So I would agree it's not a common title. I think it's thankfully becoming a little more common within our space. Hopefully we'll see that trend continue. But I took on this role in 2019, and it's really due to how integral trust and safety is to the brand and reputation of Airbnb for our platform. You know, just like any other internet company, we're dealing with online safety. So combating fraud, handling payments, ID verification, deterring, any type of online bad actor. So I think any tech company that you were to speak to is kind of thinking about those same issues. But for us, there's also the component of the offline world, the real world. We are, you know, taking in these online bookings to facilitate real world interactions between our hosts and our guests. And that would not be possible without facilitating trust. So what our founder and CEO, Brian Chesky, will often say is that Airbnb was in many ways built on the notion of trust and facilitating trust between strangers. So as the company grew and our communications team also grew, the decision was made, you know, by our leadership, including our former head of global policy and communications, whose name is Chris Lehane, who's a former Clinton White House official and really cared deeply about this issue and felt like, you know, we needed a dedicated team to handle both the reactive, if 99.9% of our reservations go off without a hitch, you know, we're still hosting a couple million people per night, every single night. So there's going to be things that come up as much as we do to, you know, try to stop it and try to facilitate safe and secure experiences. And sometimes those play out in the media. So we will handle that and make sure that, you know, we're getting the facts out and answering questions as they come, but also telling that proactive story, our proactive trust and safety narrative, because no one's going to tell that for us. That's on us to get that out there and make sure that our community and potential hosts and potential guests understand everything that we're doing to try to promote a safe and secure experience.
So obviously this makes so much sense that the whole foundation of the company is built on trust. What was the kind of reaction of the company when this role was announced? Because it kind of gives you a bit of an edge, I think, in terms of reassuring both internally and externally, you know, that you're taking this and literally building this role into the senior structure of the firm.
Yeah, it was really well received. You know, we already had a trust team. It's one of our largest teams at Airbnb, and their job on the product and operations side is to build these safety systems, build these trust and safety systems. So building our ID verification system, which shows that you are who you say you are. I know there's been a lot of talk about ID verification out there, but building our payment system, we handle all payments between hosts and guests. They're the team that does that work and have been doing it for years, for as long as I can remember. So that was really kind of the first stamp that we're going to have a team that focuses on this notion of trust all day, every day. So building that into our communication structure and our external PR structure made a lot of sense. And it was also well received, I think, by our cross-functional partners. And it was helpful to know that, you know, the communications team and our policy team was going to have a seat at the table, you know, for these types of big decisions, whether it's a new community policy or a new trust and safety system or the evolution of one of our products. Having folks at the table who can, you know, provide that perspective on, here's how this is going to be received by the outside world. This is what government officials are looking for. This is what the press is sort of asking about on any given day. It was helpful for all around. So it wasn't necessarily a controversial notion. It was really well received.
And it's obviously gives you the rigor kind of through the business and through the comms. When you've sort of added this to your remit, if we've got companies listening thinking, oh, maybe I should actually bring this on board, do you think that that's a good thing for other companies to do? Or do you feel like this is so sort of wedded to the Airbnb proposition, it's specific? And could you possibly share some things that now that you've been in the job for a while that you kind of could say, well, maybe these are the three things that I'd wish I'd known, or the three things that I've definitely known have been the most help in this role for me to kind of advance this in the business?
I definitely think it makes sense for any companies, even kind of, it doesn't need to be as big as Airbnb, kind of mid-sized companies who are playing both in the online safety world and the offline safety world. As more and more companies have been kind of thinking about roles along these lines, those of us with these roles have kind of facilitated a bit of a community, you know, in sharing best practices, because we're all dealing with kind of unforeseen challenges each and every day. I don't know, you know, for like a small startup or companies that are solely rooted, you know, in the offline world or solely rooted in the online world, if they need a dedicated team like we do that only thinks about trust and safety. But you do need someone for whom this issue is firmly in their purview. Right? You don't want it to be just something that no one's thinking about. And then all of a sudden a crisis hits and you don't know who the right engineers are to speak to, or who are the product people who are responsible for whatever happened, or the community policy people who are writing kind of the guardrails, you know, for your specific community. So even if it's not one dedicated person, having one person or a team for whom trust and safety is an important part of their remit is mission critical in my view. As far as what I wish I'd known, I wish I would have been better about thinking about how I allocate my time and just knowing that on a given week, probably 10 to 15 hours are just going to be completely unforeseen things and whatever pops up. It's going to be a news story that I didn't anticipate where all of a sudden, you know, we've got to drop everything and be managing that reporter or getting insight or facts from our community support team or a trust team. There's just so much of that in this world. And sometimes your weeks can spiral out of control. So just going in knowing, hey, you know, a good chunk of time, I'm just going to be dealing with a story that hasn't occurred yet.
Don't we love those random things that you end up not being quite the day that you thought? I wanted to ask you about the fact that your business model is basically fundamentally built on trust of the people who rent out their homes and then those who stay in them. And that's just a fascinating thing because it's strangers. But strangers, you have this connection because of your Airbnb offer. So how do you manage to foster trust between strangers?
It's a good question. And this is something that Brian talks about a lot too. When he was first, you know, trying to raise money in the very early days of the company, he was getting a lot of no thank yous from people who thought that it just couldn't work. It was crazy. No one wants to stay in a stranger's house. No one's just going to open up their extra room for who knows who that person is who's coming by. Just thought it was an impossible idea. So I think the way Brian and our other two co-founders, Joe and Nate, tell it is they had to start thinking about designing for trust at that time from day one because of that pushback that they were getting from those potential investors who just thought it was an unworkable idea. So many tenants of the original platform still exist to this day, the one that always comes to mind first for me is our two-way review system. So I think if you talk to a lot of longstanding Airbnb guests, for many of them, the first thing that they'll tell you is, I just scroll down and I pour through those reviews when I'm looking at a potential listing. I want to know what past guests were saying, and they feel confident in that because of the way we go about our review system, where hosts review guests and guests review hosts. It's a regulated system, meaning you can't just hop onto a random Airbnb listing and leave a review, which, you know, I know is the way some other platforms work. It's not the way ours work, because we know that you as a guest want to feel confident that those reviews are based on real experiences and real people who are being authentic in what they're leaving back about that listing. And same, you know, many hosts will tell you that when they get a booking request, the first thing they will do is they will look at the past reviews of that guest to say, hey, did they throw a party? Were they messy? Or have they, you know, just received nonstop exemplary reviews from other hosts? They really trust that perspective from other hosts. So that's really been the case almost since day one. And we have a really unique review system. And I think the rest of the platform has really been built off of it. So ever since, you know, we've built in that ID verification system. In the United States, we run background checks. We handle all the payments. So it's not like, say, like a classified website where you just go in and then all of a sudden you're wiring money to a person that you don't know. The money is being exchanged through the trusted platform, which is Airbnb. What was once known as the $1 million host guarantee, which was another thing that was born out of the first big crisis at Airbnb, where I think it must have been 2011 or so, someone trashed a listing, just totally trashed it. It was thousands of dollars in damage. And that case went viral. It was sort of the first public example of an Airbnb gone wrong. And that led to the creation of the first host guarantee that we are going to reimburse. We're going to get your back when it comes to that property damage. That has now evolved to what we call air cover for hosts, which, and the number has gone up to a max of $3 million that we provide on every single booking. So that's helped to establish trust with our hosts. We have air cover for guests. So if you get there and the listing is not as represented, you know, we've got your back. We're going to help you get a new listing of equal value or even greater value. And if we need to make up the difference in cost, that's something that we can do through air cover. So it's really developed over time. But it all goes back to those founding days where Airbnb really was built on trust from the start.
And that's very transparent for people. Do you think that that transparency is an important part of fostering trust, because you feel like it's all just out there for everybody to see?
Absolutely. And if you look at some other, you know, platforms in the short-term rental space, you know, you can't really see the review. You may not know who the host is. They're just built in very different ways. So we definitely believe in that transparency, particularly as it relates to our review system. And that includes protecting negative reviews. If you as a guest leave a negative review based on your authentic experience, our policy does not call for taking it down just because it's negative, right? Obviously, if there's an egregious policy violation, that's a different story. But we want both hosts and guests to feel confident in reviewing with their true feelings about their true experience. So the transparency, particularly as it pertains to our review system, is really critical.
Airbnb has said that it wants to be the world's most trusted community. So that's a very, very beautiful thing to aspire to be. But this model is so interesting, as you've touched on, because you've actually got a situation where there's no in-person interface with the company, and often with those renting the properties too. So beyond the transparency of the reviews, I mean, I'm an Airbnb customer, and I think one of the things that we always strive for when we're driving the best brand campaigns, which I like to think in my long career, got some experience of the best ones, there's got to be emotion connected to it. It can't just be information, right? The ones that you fall in love with, or the ones that you feel safe with, or the ones that you know have gone the extra mile, all of which you've touched on Airbnb are doing. So can you just talk a little bit about that community aspect? And I want to sort of just go deeper into this.
It really starts with our hosts. Hosts are at the heart of everything we do at Airbnb. So, you know, there are some property management companies, you know, with those professional vacation rentals that I mentioned before, but the majority of our community are, you know, we refer to them as core hosts, right? Where it's their home, Maybe it's a private room, maybe it's a guest house, maybe it's their primary residence and they share it when they're on travel. That's happening more and more in the kind of work from anywhere era. So facilitating that personalization really starts with our hosts and empowering them to host the way they want to host. For the most part, you know, we allow hosts to set their own house rules and everyone has different ways of thinking about, can you wear shoes in the home? When are quiet hours? Do I want to greet that guest in person or do I want to give them privacy and have kind of a remote check-in or give the guest that option? A lot of hosts are turning to that as, hey, if you want me, I'm there. If you prefer a remote check-in, that's fine too. That became much more common during COVID. But, you know, every host has a different kind of way of thinking about how they want to go about it. And it's our job as the platform to empower them to host in the way that works best for them. And it ultimately results more times than not in a personalized experience, in a unique experience, and hopefully a very special experience for those guests.
And do you think that people who have Airbnb properties near them or in their street or in their neighborhood or as their neighbors, do you have issues with how people who are the neighbors of Airbnb properties feel? How do you sort of manage the community in a wider sense?
Neighbors are really critical stakeholders for us. And that is in many ways kind of a unique part of our model, that when we think about our stakeholders, it's obviously our hosts, it's our guests, it's our employees, it's our investors, but it's also the communities that we serve, and it is those neighbors. Now, the vast majority of Airbnb hosts are hosting responsibly. They're doing the right things. They care deeply about things like parties and stopping them. And that's a really important issue for us. But we ban party houses. That's something that we brought about in 2019. In the first year that I had this role, was we announced a global ban on all party houses, which is to mean, a home that where parties are constant. It's disruptive for the neighborhood. We don't want homes like that on our platform. And that's just the right thing to do. Your question is spot on, because those neighbors, even if they may or may not be people with Airbnb accounts, they're important stakeholders for us. And you could argue even members of our community.
I mean, the more you talk, it strikes me that the whole relationship is quite personal and quite intimate. And there is a huge amount of trust. And it's also a very elevated time because we're going on holiday or we're going to have an experience, or it's not our everyday. If we're going to rent something with you, it's not your everyday. It's going to be a very considered or enthusiastic or impulsive thing, but it's going to be a special thing. And I was just really interested to hear that you put together this Trust and Safety Advisory Coalition. And I read on your site that it said proactive solutions that keep community and user safety at the forefront. And you've got 22 respected organizations being part of that. That's one hell of an undertaking, and certainly something that we at Edelman have advised often for clients who really need and would benefit from outside experts in a plethora of different areas. You've really committed to that. Can you just talk a little bit about the protection that you get from that and how you put that together?
So it's something that's been developed by our trust partnerships team, which was developed a few years ago. It's based on the principle, and I think this principle would apply to pretty much any company. You could say that we're experts in certain issues, hospitality, travel in general, whatever it may be. We're not the experts in everything. We're just not. We're in certain really sensitive, critical issues. One that comes up, obviously, it's extremely rare to see something like this happen on our platform, but human trafficking. We're not the experts in human trafficking. By no means are we the experts in human trafficking. Domestic violence. How to interact with local law enforcement. We're just not the experts. So it's critical to bring in people who are the experts, who can help advise on, fire safety is another big one that we've been thinking a lot about. These are people who can help advise on what should our policies be? What is the smartest, most thoughtful policy, keeping in mind that we're balancing kind of the interests, which often are aligned, but not every single time, between hosts and guests. So what should our policies be? How should we be building out our teams? What should our systems look like to help enforce upon those policies? So our platform exists in 220 countries and regions. It's just vast. every part of the world, tens of thousands of cities, big and small, you can find an Airbnb. And these issues can play out differently in different parts of the world. So for that Trust and Safety Advisory Coalition, we've been working to really broaden and diversify the geographical reach so we can get more dedicated counsel on, you know, how does the party issue play out in Latin America as compared to Europe, as compared to Africa, as compared to the United States, because it's not the same everywhere. So they've been really, really helpful in helping us develop our policies further and just make them as robust and fair as they can be. But they're living documents at the end of the day. You know, I don't think there's one policy where we can just point to it and say that will never change ever. You know, we have to be able to adjust based on changing circumstances, how our community is evolving, how the world is evolving. And the Trust and Safety Advisory Coalition is a really important part of that. And I think, you know, for any company, you never want to get too insular, right? And just, you want to avoid groupthink. But again, it all starts with just acknowledging when you're not the expert in the room on a particular issue and just being vulnerable in that respect.
Yeah, I think the outside in is so important. And also you've touched on something that makes me want to ask you about local culture, because you've got 220 countries and trust may be driven differently in different countries, or those communities may be different because there's cultural differences and one size does not fit all, but you've also got your own principles and your own values. So how do you sort of manage that as a business, given the incredible outreach that you have across the world?
I think it starts, I know you guys focus quite a bit on ethics and how that should be applied in corporate cultures. I think it definitely starts with ethical principles, which have to apply consistently for all of us who work at Airbnb. Just as you said, different countries, different rules, different regulations, different cultures. But we need a set of consistent ethical principles. But the vast overwhelming majority of our policies are also global. Now, we also, you know, don't want anyone violating their local law, you know, when it comes to certain more sensitive, policies. There are certain countries where, for example, discrimination is codified into the law. You know, that's not something that, you know, we're in a place to fix as one platform, but we do have a consistent anti-discrimination policy that applies to all of our hosts and guests. In fact, we have what we call the Airbnb Community Commitment, which you have to attest to when you first sign up for Airbnb. And it basically, it's just a short attestation to say, you will not discriminate. You will not operate. You will operate without judgment and without bias about the other people, about the people on the other end of that interaction, whether it's a host or a guest. So everyone has to attest to that before they're allowed to use Airbnb. Now, you would think that everyone would check that box, right? Just an easy thing. 2.5 million people have not checked that box. They've declined to sign that commitment. Those 2.5 million people are not allowed to use Airbnb as a result. We have declined their business because that's just table stakes for us. You have to attest to that commitment and that you're not going to discriminate and that you're going to operate without judgment or bias before we'll allow you to use Airbnb as a host or a guest.
That's incredible. I'm really fascinated by that sort of patchwork quilt of how that all works around the world. And you talked about Edelman talking about ethics, and obviously we're known for our trust barometer. This year, business came out as the only institution among business, government, media, and NGOs that is seen as both competent and ethical. A 19-point jump in ethics since 2020, which is quite extraordinary. Do you feel that your consumers are asking this of you in terms of, you know, having this emphasis? And what have you done recently beyond the things that you've touched on to be ethical? Is the sort of ethical thought something that drives some of these decisions? And how do you communicate that with all of the consumers that you have globally?
You know, I think the community commitment was actually a big part of that because, you know, obviously we didn't need to institute that commitment, but we did it because it was the right thing to do. And it just felt like a good way to, you know, bring people into our community while making clear where we stood and just sort of the basics when it comes to, you know, being able to use Airbnb as a host or a guest. over in Ukraine, we started to see a really fascinating trend. As you know, I mentioned earlier ID verification, that we have these systems to verify you are a real person, you are who you say you are. And random community members started taking note of that and thinking, here's an interesting way to lend direct support to real people in Ukraine.
So I'm going to interrupt you because one of those people was me.
Oh, really? No kidding. Okay.
So not only did I rent several properties in Ukraine, I got about 20 of my friends to do it.
My goodness.
And one of those families has become a very close family to me, and they emigrated to Canada.
Oh, that's incredible.
And the money that she got and her friends got from us renting went to the maternity hospital to get doctors some help where babies were dying.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's obviously not something we planned for. I think it was just a regular person, you know, could have been you, who just had this idea and tweeted about it. And it became this incredible grassroots movement as it started to spread. And it really took on a life of its own. And it led to millions of dollars being sent directly to, you know, just regular Airbnb hosts throughout the country. We ended up waiving all of our fees. That was the decision we made to help kind of facilitate that further. And look, this is not what the platform was developed for. It was developed to facilitate real world experiences. But this was just something that took on a life of its own. And our leadership made the decision in the moment that, you know, we just need to support it. We need to support it as best we can. And meanwhile, we had activated our Airbnb.org nonprofit side, I think you mentioned earlier, to help provide housing for the actual refugees who were leaving the country. So it was just an incredible groundswell. But something like that, you know, it just takes it takes pausing and reflecting. Again, do we want to just let this happen in the background, or do we want to help, you know, actually amplify it and facilitate it? And we chose the latter. And I'm glad we did. You know, I think we saw a lot of examples of lives being changed, people who really needed that money in the moment to get out of the country or to afford their next meal or to clothe their children who were truly desperate. So it was a very emotional time for a lot of us working for the country. It reminded us of why we enjoy working here, because it does facilitate that type of community.
What I love about this conversation, Ben, is that you've gone from some very kind of grown-up business-like advice about how to build trust in a business right the way through to how this actually impacts community, where there's actually massive challenge and tragedy. But you were able to be nimble enough, even with being a thoughtful sort of corporation, you still kept the heartbeat of the original offer, and you were able to be nimble enough to support that whole community that was impacted in such a major way. And I love that it's a little full circle for you and I, because I never knew you were going to tell that story. And I thought, yep, I did that. I was part of that. And it helped the feeling of frustration to feel that you could do something. So it's a really good dance that I think Airbnb have managed to have between growing up and being very ethical, very principled, and increasing all of the safety while still remaining core to being nimble enough to be able to service something like that. It's a very hard balance to strike.
For us, a lot of it comes down to how do you grow while staying true to your roots, right? I think for a lot of us, it comes down to our three founders. Brian and Nate are still in everyday roles with the company. Joe recently transitioned, so he's no longer full-time, but he's still on the board and still very much present. So those three still being embedded into the culture of Airbnb has helped us remain true to our roots. And it's been very critical, I think, both for the growth of the company and the continuing focus on trust at the heart of it.
So, Ben, I'm sorry to say that that's all we have time for today. I've loved hearing your stories and hearing about the business and your insights and your expertise. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for listening to The Trustmakers.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers. an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.